WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, Hurricane Milton. I'm Mike Dubusky. Hurricane Milton is expected to make landfall within the hour in western Florida, with the northern part of the storm's eyewall now just beginning to move ashore near Sarasota. Just north, Tampa is getting hit with torrents of rain. Peak storm surge is expected to be between 5 and 13 feet, depending on the area. And tornadoes are proving to be a major concern as well, with 116 warnings in the state and 19 confirmed touchdowns. Governor Ron DeSantis addressed the tornado threat in a press conference.
If you start to get in a situation where trees are snapping, power's popping, you do have to treat it like a tornado. And then if you are in a tornado warning, that's a duck and cover in a place that's safe.
Officials say several counties in Florida have already reported storm damage from Milton, with roughly 125 homes destroyed so far. This is ABC News. Worries about Milton have forced the cancellation of Friday's preseason game in Orlando between the Magic and the New Orleans Pelicans. The NBA says the game won't be rescheduled. A game tomorrow between the Heat and the Hawks has been postponed until October 16th. The European Union has launched a humanitarian air bridge operation for Lebanon.
Flights will depart from Dubai and Brindisi, with the first one arriving in Beirut in 2 days. In Brussels, an EU spokesman says what'll be on board.
Blankets and emergency shelter material and many others. This, of course, comes on top of the large amount of medicine and medical equipment that we have been channeling in via the EU civil protection mechanism.
Lebanon's government estimates that some 1.2 million people have been displaced in the fighting. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
And Amazon Pharmacy announcing it has plans to open new drugstores in 20 cities next year. I'm Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes, this man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin wildlife officials are warning about a disease fatal to deer, commonly known as EHD. The Department of Natural Resources has confirmed cases in deer from Chippewa, Jackson, and Waukesha counties. EHD is spread by insects that bite. Humans can't get it. Anyone who sees a sick or dead deer is urged to contact the DNR. Wisconsin crews are standing by to help Florida recover from Hurricane Milton, Stuart J. Waddles reports.
Power crews from Cedarburg, Oconomowoc, and Hartford are preparing to assist with recovery efforts. We Energies is also sending a team of over 24 workers down to help restore power and mitigate the impact of the hurricane. To find out how you can help, visit civicmedia.us/help. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers defense reviewed. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers host the Arizona Cardinals, who are coming off a win over the 49ers in San Francisco. Defensive tackle Kenny Clark asked if the new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, trusts players to rush the quarterback without giving up a big play.
He trusting us, trusting the front. He just cutting us loose. And, we were just expecting to make plays against this offense, against this offensive line. You know, they bled us a little bit in the run game. Got to do better there, but the turnovers we had, how we rushed the passer, going against a really good quarterback.
College football, the Badgers play Rutgers Saturday. So how is sophomore Braden Locke progressing at quarterback this season? Offensive coordinator Phil Longo.
I think Braden Locke, who has done a good job of making decisions between the signal and the snap, he's just really, really, really high end from a mental standpoint. He's a junkie and he loves it. I think that's kind of where you have to be if you want to take this quarterback position to a different level.
That's Badgers coach Phil Longo. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some frosty areas tonight with a mostly clear sky and a low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high to the low 70s. Then the cooling trend kicks in. High upper 60s on Friday, only upper 50s Saturday, and around 50 Sunday. Right now it's 50.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we welcome state archaeologist Amy Rosebro to the program as she explains history being brought up from the lakes in Madison. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton cup, hit me cup, baby.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Cudahy Wee, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Haley Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations.
Awesome. Hey, we're always excited to host these monthly conversations in partnership with the City of Minneapolis. Guest host Christine McDonald is back today with some more great guests, and I want to just welcome Christine and your guests. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. Bushu, Ogadaki, Gabuik, Nindishnika, Sajishakni, Vindem. I am Christine McDonald. I'm your guest host of Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations. I am the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And today is Wednesday, October
9th, I think.
October 9th. Okay, it's important because I wanted to make sure that we first talk about Monday is Indigenous Peoples Day. And in 2014, the City of Minneapolis did vote to recognize the second Tuesday of every October as Indigenous Peoples Day. And with that, we have started a tradition of having a sunrise ceremony. And I just want to make sure that the community knows that everybody is invited to start the day off in this really good way. We meet at B'day Makashka on the south end of the lake at Thomas Beach, which is at 3740 West B'day Makashka. We are really happy that we've been able to have Lemoyne LaPointe family lead the ceremony every year. So we'll gather at 7 a.m. in the morning, and then the ceremony will start around 7:15. And it usually lasts for about 20, 30 minutes, but just warm. And it's always beautiful, whether it's sunny or cloudy or wet, cold, warm. It's always beautiful, and it's always so nice to see community and relatives out at this event. So I hope to see you all there.
Absolutely. And Haley will probably be swimming prior to that, right, Haley?
Yeah, with Rachel and her crew.
Polar plunging. What a great way to start the day. So Election Day is Tuesday, November 5th, and early voting is already underway. So if you haven't voted yet, and some of you may be planning to vote for the first time this year, we're going to get some answers to any questions you may have about that. Joining us now to talk about that is Katie Smith, who is the Director of Minneapolis Election and Voting Services. I'm so happy to have you here today, Katie. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at the city?
Oh, thank you so much for the welcome. My name is Katie Smith. I'm the Director of Elections and Voter Services here for City of Minneapolis. So we're the division of the city that's responsible for running all of our elections, whether that's our municipals or whether that's this year's presidential election. If you're voting and you live in the city of Minneapolis, that's our division that you're interacting with. And we're doing all the behind scenes work, getting everything ready to go out to the polls, tabulating the mail ballots. That's our team. And I'm really lucky and fortunate to get to be a part of that team here at the city. Before I worked here, I worked in Olmsted County in Rochester, Minnesota, also doing elections work, and not originally from Minnesota. I moved here from Illinois in 2017, so I am a happy transplant.
I am so happy you're with us. Thank you. Can you tell us about this year's election and what's on the ballot?
Yeah, it's a really important ballot this year. Might be familiar with the fact that the president and vice president race is on there, but there's a lot of other equally important races ranging from the school board, there's legislative offices, there's ballot questions, there's a constitutional amendment. My best advice, I'll give you one web address. It's vote.minneapolismn.gov. That's our web page. It'll link over to wherever you need to go. Whatever your question is, that's kind of your one-stop shop for anything elections. But if you go there, you can look and get a sample ballot, and that'll have an exact copy of exactly what your individual ballot's going to look like for your ward and precinct. So you can look at it ahead of time, make your plans for who you're going to want to vote for. There's even links on that page where you can link over to the individual candidates' web pages. So it's a good way before you vote to start early and prep and plan so you can make those selections.
That's great. We're just now weeks away. Are there other things that voters should be doing now to be ready?
Yeah, we talk about making your plans for how you're going to vote, but you should also make your plans for when and where you're going to vote. And there's still a whole lot of options for how you want to cast your ballot. That might be voting on election day itself, and you might want to go on and find your polling place. That might be voting early, and we have a lot of different options for voting early. Our main office is already open now. Starting on October 22nd, we're going to open up some additional satellite early voting centers. And then we also have a really cool new option to vote this year. There was some legislative change that lets us host one-day pop-up voting events across the city at different places. And they're just one day only. There's one we're doing on Wednesday, October 30th, actually, at the Little Earth of United Tribes. That's 2501 South Cedar, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. But we do have 11 different ones of those. And again, that same web address, you can find the entire list of them to find one that works easy for you. And there's also still just plenty of time if you prefer to vote by mail to go ahead and get your ballot requested in that way as well.
That's pretty exciting. I can't wait to see how those pop-up voting sites work, especially the one at Little Earth. It's a great way to get our community out early. Can you remind people just who is eligible to vote these days?
Yes. So requirements for eligibility to vote include being a U.S. citizen, being at least 18 years old on election day. But if you are 16 or 17, you can pre-register. So you're already on the books whenever you actually turn 18 and can participate. You need to be a resident of Minnesota for the at least 20 days leading up to election day. Not currently incarcerated for a felony conviction and not under a court order that revokes that right. And there was one really important change that I'll point out in that list legislatively as well, and that's the not currently incarcerated. That's a change from the old language. It is just a lot easier to understand, makes a lot more sense, and it restored voting rights to a lot of individuals. So basically now, if you're free, you can vote. So if you're not currently incarcerated, you can cast your ballot.
So that means whether or not you're on paper or off paper, yeah, as long as you're not incarcerated at the moment, people are eligible to vote.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. That's great. And how does someone vote by mail?
You can apply online at the Secretary of State's website to get your ballot. If you don't have internet access, you can call 311. We can send you out a paper form. We encourage everyone to go ahead and apply right away. It gives you more time to make all your selections, give you ample time to get it mailed back to us. The recommended time, we say try at least to get your app in by October the 29th, but the earlier the better, because you want to have plenty of time for it to make it back and forth in the mail stream. It does have to be in by election day in order for it to be counted. It's due back election night when polls close at 8 p.m. That's also the mail voting deadline, so it has to be back to our office on time. There is the option, if it's starting to get kind of late and getting really close to election day, you can drop that ballot off instead of actually returning it by mail. But you can drop it off either at our main office, you can drop it off to any of our early voting centers, or even at those pop-up sites if one of those is close for you. And then I like to remind everyone that voting by mail, it's an entirely free process. You don't have to put postage even on your return piece of mail that you have provided envelopes.
That is amazing.
This is Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations episode on Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Voting rights matter, and it's important to know where you stand. In Minnesota, if you're not currently in prison, you can vote, even with a felony conviction. For nearly 10 years, Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT, has empowered Native American communities by increasing voter turnout and encouraging conversations about the issues that matter. Together, they're making sure every voice is heard and counted. Find your early voting location at sos.state.mn.us. Let's make voting a lasting tradition for generations.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Howl!
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. In this part of the show today, we are talking with Katie Smith, who is the Director of Minneapolis Elections and Voter Services, and we're talking about how to make sure that you get registered to vote, how you have to make sure that your vote gets counted, and how do I make sure that my mail ballot will be counted, Katie?
Yes, great topic. We often hear misconceptions that mail ballots are only counted in certain circumstances or if the race is really close, but that's not true in Minnesota. If you vote by mail, that's the same ballot, same everything that you would vote if you voted early in person or if you voted on election day, and they are all counted. You just want to make sure that it's turned in by 8 p.m. on election day. And you can actually track your ballot on the Secretary of State's website, which is mnvotes.gov. and you'll be able to see that it gets to the accepted status. And if you don't have access, you can call 311 and check over the phone that your ballot has been accepted.
Am I able to help friends or family drop off their mail ballots by the deadline?
Yes, absolutely. You can drop off the ballot of up to three other individuals. So four ballots total, your own plus three others. If you're dropping off someone else's ballot, you do have to verify your identification and sign the drop-off log.
Thanks. If I apply to vote by mail, or if I still have my mail ballot with me at home, could I change my mind and go and vote in person instead?
Yes, if you've requested your mail ballot in Minnesota, that doesn't mark you as having voted. You're not marked as having voted until your ballot has been returned and accepted. So if you've changed your mind, don't want to vote at home, would prefer to vote at the polls on election day, or would prefer to vote early, or would love to come to see me and my team when we're out at Little Earth, you can absolutely change your mind and do that. It'll be the same process when you go in to vote in person, and you don't need to do anything with those mail materials. You can actually just shred those up and throw them away.
So it might be a good idea if I'm thinking I might be out of town and I might want to do my mail-in ballot to go ahead and get it sent out to me, and then I can just still change my mind if I have the opportunity. It's great.
Yes, it's always up to you on which method you want to participate. But if you've chosen to request a mail ballot, it doesn't lock you into that.
So what are my options if I don't want to, or if it's too late to vote early by mail? What could I do?
Yeah, so you'll still have the options of voting at the Early Vote Center. We're open here at 980 East Hennepin at our main site. Or like I said, we're going to have some additional sites opening up. We'll do some extended hours. We'll have some weekend hours. Those kind of all kick off starting on October the 22nd. So there's the option to vote early in person. And then there's also the option to vote on Election Day itself. On election day, you can't vote at those early vote options. You have to vote at your polling place in your precinct. So recommend double checking before you head out to the polls and just making sure that you know where your polling place is on election day itself. Some of those changed after the last census. So if you haven't voted since the last presidential election, it could have changed. So we always just recommend double checking it. And again, you can just go to our main site and there'll be a link there to check your polling place.
That's great. So let's talk about voter registration. If you're registered to vote, do you ever have to re-register?
Once you've registered, you never have to re-register again, unless you have a change of your name, or if you move, or if you don't vote at least once during an election cycle, when an election cycle is that entire four-year cycle. And if so, then you would need to re-register. You can do that online. You can register online through next Tuesday the 15th to pre-register, or you can actually register when you're voting as well.
If someone doesn't need to register or update, if they do need to register or update the registration, what do they do? How do they do it?
Yes. So like I mentioned, that pre-registration deadline is October the 15th. So ahead of then, you can actually go online and register to vote online. If you need to register while you are voting, Minnesota is an election day registration state, and that applies to early voting or voting on election day. And you can actually register when voting by mail, even as a part of that election day registration process. You will need to bring a proof of residency with you. There's a full list of those that are listed out on our website, so recommend checking that just to make sure you know what you're bringing with you. And those could be things like valid identification, so a driver's license, a photo ID, or a tribal ID card that's current and valid and has your photo and your address on it. If you don't have that, you might have, I know some of the tribal ID cards don't have the address, but you can pair that with certain bills. Or if you have maybe a driver's license but it's expired, you can still use that, but then you'll have to bring one of those other bills with you. And that full list of all of those options is listed out on the website.
So I remember a few years back, we were getting people to vote. We were kind of sitting outside in Little Earth. And have they voted yet? Do you know where to vote? One of the options was if they weren't registered, they could have somebody vouch for them. Is that still an option?
Yes, there's 7 different options. That's one that I didn't mention in there. It's listed out on the website. But yeah, someone else who knows you that lives in your precinct, as long as they're registered or they can register without a voucher, they can vouch for you saying, I know this person and that's where they live.
Okay, great. When do we find out about the results of this election?
So after the polls close on November the 5th, all of our results from in-person voting will get merged together with all of our votes from early voting and mail voting, and those will be an unofficial vote total for each of the precincts. Those are going to be posted on the Minnesota Secretary of State's website, that mnvotes.gov address. So you can see the results locally start coming in there.
And some people I know are probably going to need assistance with voting. What can they do? What are some options for them?
Yeah, so you can bring anyone with you except an agent or your employer or your union, and they can be your assistants. And they can help through any part of the voting process, whether that's moving around in the polling place, whether that's in the voting booth helping you to mark your ballot. We also have ballot marking devices, should you not be able to hold a pen or should you choose to use that method. And it's got a lot of cool features. It has Braille. It can read the ballot aloud via headphones. And then after you mark your choices, a printer would fill out your ballot on your behalf. Of course, we have poll workers that are there that can help to assist. If you can't enter the polling place because of mobility or illness, we also can bring the ballot out to you through a process called curbside voting. And then we have a lot of bilingual poll workers, and we have a lot of our materials that are translated. You can also bring a bilingual assistant with you as well.
So if me or somebody run into problems voting, what do we do? Who should we call?
So every polling place has someone who's designated as the head judge in that polling place, and effectively they're the supervisor of that polling place, and they have extensive training. They attend extra classes with our office. So your first thing would be to ask to talk to the head judge, and hopefully they can help to resolve any problem. If you've left the polling place already and want to talk to someone or something didn't go as planned, contact Minneapolis 311. They can get you directly in touch with me here at my desk.
Okay. And then I know Minneapolis moved to ranked choice voting. Is there going to be ranked choice voting in this election?
There's no ranked choice voting this year. That's only for our municipal seats, and you won't see any of the municipal seats on this ballot. That'll be next November in 2025.
Okay. And then do you have any final advice for people as we head towards Election Day?
My biggest piece of advice, just to reiterate again, is to have a plan. There's still plenty of time, no matter which method you would like to participate in, whether that's voting early by mail or on election day, depending on how you like to cast your ballot, just make a plan and be prepared.
And then I know it probably is a little bit late this year, but what about people getting involved in the voting process? How do you find people to work at the polls?
Yes, we are fortunate that we are fully staffed this year, but we need election judges every year, not just this one election. So on our website, vote.minneapolismn.gov, there's also a link where you can sign up to be an election judge. And those are the people that you interact with when you go to the polling place. It's the person that checks you in, the person that gets you your ballot. Everyone's favorite position is the person that gets to give you your sticker when you leave. That's everybody's favorite thing. But we're always looking for individuals, definitely always looking for individuals that have any sort of bilingual skills.
What are some of the things that they do?
So some of the roles of the election judge would be the person that greets you when you enter, makes sure that you're at the correct polling place. They're the person that's using the electronic poll book to look up your name and address and check you in or help you register if you're not already on the list. They get you your ballot, make sure you're getting issued the correct ballot for where you live within the city.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This is a special report from ABC News, Hurricane Milton. I'm Mike DeBusky. Hurricane Milton is expected to make landfall within the hour in western Florida, with the northern part of the storm's eyewall now just beginning to move ashore near Sarasota. Just north, Tampa is getting hit with torrents of rain. Peak storm surge is expected to be between 5 and 13 feet, depending on the area. And tornadoes are proving to be a major concern as well, with 116 warnings in the state and 19 confirmed touchdowns. Governor Ron DeSantis addressed the tornado threat in a press conference.
If you start to get in a situation where trees are snapping, power's popping, you do have to treat it like a tornado. And then if you are in a tornado warning, that's a duck and cover in a place that's safe.
Officials say several counties in Florida have already reported storm damage from Milton, with roughly 125 homes destroyed so far. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The crime rate in Wisconsin's largest city is trending down. Milwaukee's third quarter crime report shows a 22% drop in homicides since last year. Other violent crimes like rape, arson, and burglary are also down. On the other hand, vehicle thefts are up 17% from a year ago. Robberies are also on the rise. The candidates for 3rd District Congress sound open to debating each other, Jimmy Kuska reports.
Republican incumbent Derek Van Orden said he had nothing to be concerned about in debating Democratic challenger Rebecca Cook, calling his congressional record, quote, impeccable. Cook issued a statement saying Van Orden has been avoiding events where the two would be together and that he refused to debate Brad Paff in 2022. The election is on November 5th. I'm Jimmy Kuska.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. Grief can affect people in different ways. When Lisa Marie Presley lost her only son Benjamin in 2020, she literally could not say goodbye. CNN Entertainment reports that Lisa Marie, Elvis's only child, kept her son's body at home for 2 months after his death. Presley's memoir, From Here to the Great Unknown, was published posthumously. Lisa Marie passed away in January of 2023. Her memoir was completed by her daughter, actress Riley Keough, who used tapes that her mother had made to complete the work. Keough says there are no laws in the state of California that state a body needs to be buried immediately, so they kept Benjamin's body on ice in a room where the temperature had to be 55 degrees. She also says that Lisa Marie wanted to do this because Elvis's body was kept at their home after he died of a heart attack when he was 42, which allowed Lisa Marie to take her time and say a proper goodbye. Lisa Marie Presley and Benjamin Presley were both buried with Elvis at Graceland Cemetery. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some frosty areas tonight with a mostly clear sky and a low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high to the low 70s. Then the cooling trend kicks in, high upper 60s on Friday, only upper 50s Saturday, and around 50 Sunday. It's 46 right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
She is performing in Wisconsin. Charo, you might want to end up moving here because you're going to have that great of a time in Baraboo. Let me just ask you this. Do you like cheese?
I love the cheese. I'm going to be eating cheese for 24 hours. It's a great... Not really. You have a great reputation with the cheese. Wisconsin cheese is very, very famous.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
She's the fabulous farm babe. She is Pam Yonke. One of the reports that you guys did from last week was about the cow photographers.
When you go to World Dairy Expo, it never ceases to amaze me. Hair dryers, goop for their hair, for their hooves, everything. When it's time for them to go potty, somebody walks around behind them with a bucket. Now that's pampering, if you ask me.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Thursday morning, we're joined by Tricia Zunker to talk about this weekend's Central Wisconsin Indigenous People's Day powwow in Rothschild.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald. I am the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And for the second half of our show today, we have our next guest, the City's New Arts and Cultural Affairs Department. Ben Johnson and Mary Altman are with us. Can we start off by having you guys introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for the city?
Sure. First, I just want to say it's such an honor to be part of the radio show today. So thank you so much for the invitation. We're huge fans of Christine. So thank you on behalf of the Arts Department, Arts and Cultural Affairs Department. So I'm Ben Johnson, and I'm relatively new to the city. I started in March of 2023. Prior to that, I am from Minnesota. I was born and raised in Minnesota, in southern Minnesota. And I had stints at the Ordway Music Theater, and then I moved to Detroit for 13 years. I came back as the director of Northup Concerts and Lectures at the University of Minnesota, and then went to Los Angeles, where I worked for both the city of LA and the city of Beverly Hills. And I'm really just thrilled to be back in Minnesota now.
Yeah, I can't believe it's already been a year, more than a year, year and a half.
Over a year and a half.
Yeah, it's been so great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Mary.
Yes, I'm Mary Altman. I've been with the city since 2001, so a long time. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
And I lead the public art program and have done so the entire time. And I have one of the best jobs in the whole city.
Yeah, I think you do. It's pretty fun working with you guys. So can you tell us about what the Arts and Cultural Affairs Department is? It's pretty new to the city.
Yeah, so it's a new department as of 2023. And what I like to tell people is that our job is to deliver cultural services to everyone who lives in Minneapolis, and then find opportunities for artists that live here or who want to work here. When our department was formed, they placed two other areas under the brand new department. One was the Office of Arts, Culture, and Creative Economy that was renamed Public Programs and Grants. And then we have our public arts division, and Mary has been the steadfast steward of that for many years. Incredible job. And we are in the early stages of this department. We're in growth mode for sure. And we want to just do the right diligence to ensure that Minneapolis remains the creative engine that we think it is for the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. We focus on music, dance, theater, film, visual art, literary art, craft, design, architecture, presenters, venues, festivals, artists that work at the intersection of social justice, climate change, arts education, entrepreneurs, cultural communities. And I say that because I think that is what we are in our city, and we examine how our city does or does not support the conditions for a thriving artistic and quality of life for our city. We are in the business of funding and supporting and galvanizing the community around creative ambition, creative potential, creative instinct, creative intelligence. And that's sort of the frame that we like to think about as we move our whole program forward. We have a couple of different programs I'll just highlight that we've just announced, and then Mary will talk about public art. There's two big programs that we're really excited about. One is called Vibrant Storefronts. And so we're reimagining the footprint of downtown and taking over storefronts and placing them with galvanizing arts groups. And we'll be naming our first tranche of awardees in the next couple of weeks. And then I'm really excited about our Cultural Districts Fund. This is a brand new program for the city as well, where we're funding the 7 designated cultural districts. And these funds help support an ambassadors program, support new festivals and existing festivals and cultural spaces so they're not displaced, and then also just really leaning into the most creative artistic ideas through arts activations. And then also, I think it's really worth noting that we had our inaugural Poet Laureate this year.
Yes.
And she is Hyde E. Erdrich, who's Ojibwe.
Yes.
And so we're just thrilled with her, and her term will come to an end in December, and where she will gift us the very first ever home for the city of Minneapolis, yes, at the Minneapolis American Indian Center on December 5th.
That's exciting. I just want to mention that she was my first guest on the show.
Oh, that's great. That's
great.
I will pass the torch to Mary to talk about the public art program.
So the city's public art program, unlike the department, has been around for a long time, since the mid-1980s. And we have commissioned over 100 works of art during that time. The program has three basic components: new commissions by artists. And at any given time, we're working on about 12 new commissions in the city. We also have a collection of 100 works throughout the city and neighborhoods and downtown, and we maintain those works and educate the public about them. And then also we manage a process for approving outside requests to put art on city property and on city streets.
Can you tell us who is the Minneapolis Arts Commission?
Yes, so the Minneapolis Arts Commission has actually been around for 50 years, so longer than the public art program, and they actually started the public art program. They've been meeting monthly for 50 years. They're a very engaged group of volunteers, and they advise the city council, the mayor, and city staff on arts issues, and they also have the authority to make a lot of decisions related to the public art program.
Do you know how many people?
And also, we'll be looking for arts commissioners in the spring, so if folks are interested in volunteering to be on the Arts Commission, they should check the Boards and Commissions section on the city's website.
Do you know how many people sit on that commission?
17.
17. Do you know how many vacancies there are?
Right now, I think there's probably about 7.
So okay.
We have lots of room.
There's lots of room for people to be represented on that commission. Ben, can you tell us more about the Cultural Arts District Ambassadors?
Yes. So this is this brand new program, and we just announced our first awardees, 54 awardees across the city.
Wow.
So the Cultural Districts program is actually the idea of Cultural Districts are part of the city's official 2040 plan. And there are 7 designated districts, and East Franklin is one of those districts. And so for each district, we have this Cultural Districts Arts Fund. And the fund has 3 primary programs. One is this ambassadors program. So for each district, we select one person. Someone proposes, and then we select them. And I'm really thrilled to say that Lydia Fourhorns of Two Rivers Arts Gallery is the ambassador for the next year. So the role.
Congratulations to Lydia, yes.
So Lydia's job is, and all of the ambassadors' jobs are, to identify all the arts and cultural organizations and artists and community groups within the neighborhood and just coordinate a quarterly gathering so everyone can come together, meet up, and talk about programming, hang out together, talk about issues, concerns, and also deliver information that is urgent for the community that we should know from an arts and cultural perspective. When these cultural districts were formed, they weren't formed as arts and cultural districts.
Right.
They were political districts. And so we're adding an arts and cultural overlay onto all of the 7 districts. So Lydia, we'll be working with Lydia to coordinate those. And her funding specifically is for her labor to coordinate all of this. Also to pay for any spaces that might be used and gathering expenses, which is often code for food. But, you know, there are expenses. And so we just want to make sure there's nothing that we're taking for granted or advantage of. But it's really meant to be a sort of a neighborhood cohesion strategy, too. Just like, what a great opportunity for someone just to hang out every, you know, 3 months in a different place in each district. The other funds are very specific, too. They're much larger. One is to help support new or existing festivals in the district. To expand and grow them and to invite more local artists to participate in them. And another part of that is to support existing cultural spaces so they don't get displaced through gentrification. So the last thing, what I hate to see is like spaces are blown through, torn down, and a condo is put up, and not that that's a bad thing, not that we don't need housing, but those places are often the anchors for community. And we want to make sure that those anchors don't go away. Those also are to support new programming of local Minneapolis-based artists. So a real direct infusion there for bigger level of grants to have more impact. The more money there is, the more impact. And the third part of that are smaller grants which are our arts activation grants. And so this is like, I'm really hoping that the creatives in East Franklin or artists that want to work in East Franklin will really come up with their most amazing and interesting ideas. And so they can be on any topic, but it is an arts activation opportunity. So for instance, if you've had a wild, crazy idea that you've always wanted to do, but have never had the money to do it, this is to help seed and support you and sort of trying to get people to lean into that idea that they can be part of these programs. And I'm trying to surface a lot of new narratives for the community. We know where artists lead, often community goes, and we're just trying to see what kind of stimulation this can do for the community. And it's, in many ways, arts are the secret sauce for make holding neighborhoods together. Mm-hmm. And so we want to support that in a very focused way. Now, anybody from Minneapolis can apply for these grants. The programming just has to happen in the within the district and within five blocks of the district. So the footprint is quite big, large, allows us to really have as many people do programming as much as possible. Schools can apply, churches can apply, restaurants can apply, bars can apply, service organizations can apply, neighborhood organizations, artists, arts groups, nonprofit, you know, independent artists. So we really have a broad spectrum. We just want everyone to be creative.
Mm-hmm. So with those other two pieces outside of the ambassador, are those, they have to apply for those grants with your department? And so it's not necessarily directly related. It can be in a totally separate group that does the, like the festival and other pieces.
I'm not sure if I understand. Everyone has to apply through our, our grant program.
Okay. So there's three different things.
Yeah. So there's three different programs as part of cultural district funds.
Okay.
So all three of those are part of the cultural district funding.
Okay. That's super exciting. I can't wait to see what kind of festival or music fest, something that happens along Franklin Avenue. We had one there a number of years back, and we just didn't find the way to sustain it.
Often it comes down to money.
Yep, and that's what it was.
So here we hope. We'll hope that somebody will lean back in. And so we just started it, and then in next year we'll be announcing it in the spring. So next year we'll have, we've just announced 54, so 120 some projects happening in Minneapolis for the first time. This is a brand new program, so it's a new level of creativity in our city.
Exciting.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Every day, our people suffer at the hand of domestic and sexual violence. But you are sacred and deserve to be safe in your own home. Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here to help. Native-centered, empowerment-based, trauma-informed advocates offer safety, sovereignty, and support. Call or text 844-7NATIVE. To chat online, visit www.strongheartshelpline.org. Reach out today.
The Minneapolis Institute of Art is featuring the art and legacy of Jody Falwell, a groundbreaking potter from Capa Owinga, New Mexico. Over the past 50 years, Falwell has revolutionized Pueblo pottery and native art by weaving in personal, political, and social stories into her pieces. Her exhibition titled Opawa Omong shows the incredible range of her work and the impact she's had on both native and contemporary American art. You can check it out at MIA through January. For more info, visit artsmia.org.
Indigenous communities are on the front lines of air pollution. Pipelines, mines, and waste incinerators are often built near our homes, harming Mother Earth and our health. The result? Higher rates of asthma, diabetes, heart disease, and other serious health problems. In the Twin Cities, air pollution disproportionately affects Native and Black communities. Indigenous Minnesotans, especially in the metro, experience over twice the rate of asthma compared to white Minnesotans. This pollution affects our quality of life and the future of our children. In Minneapolis, our vote helped close the Smith Foundry and Bituminous Roadways. Let's continue using our vote to fight for climate justice. Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT, empowers Native communities by increasing voter turnout and supporting conversations about critical issues like clean air, water, and health. By getting involved, we shape the policies that protect our families and environment. Find your nearest polling location at sos.state.mn.us. Let's make voting a tradition for future generations.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Aha!
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us. In this portion of the show, we have our friends from the City's Arts and Cultural Affairs Department, Director Ben Johnson, and Public Arts Supervisor Mary Altman. Mary, can you share with us how Native artists have been involved in public art in the City of Minneapolis so far?
Sure. So we have a number of artworks that have been designed by and created by Native artists in our collection. I'm going to just feature a few. One is called Protecting the Generations, and it's by artist Marlena Miles, who many people know. This is one of 17 artworks that's in the city's new public service building. And it's actually, and the public service building is at 505 Fifth Avenue South. This artwork is actually on the Skyway, so you can see it if you're going through the Skyway. And it spans six interior windows, which feature Dakota words and values, and also flora and fauna from six regions of Minnesota that are important to the Dakota people, including Wedowanagi or Spirit Island and Pipestone. We also have a work on the 10th floor of the building by artist Rory Wakemup that is called Anangwaka, and which means there are many stars. And it's an artwork that resembles the night sky. It's an illuminated lobby ceiling, and it's inspired by water and the sky. It has glowing reflecting lights that reflect in a mirrored plastic material called polycarbonate. And it portrays, and they blink on and off, and it really looks like twinkling stars. The relaxing environments of flowing water and night sky connect us to the ethereal world and our understanding of the multi-universe, Rory says. And so this artwork seeks to create a similar experience for city workers in the building who have stressful jobs. And so it's a nice, tranquil peace and respite for city employees and other visitors. We also have an artwork. If you go to the Sunrise Ceremony, you can go see it on Bede Makaska, called Zaniyan Yutotka, which means brave change, which is by Mona Smith, Sandy Spieler, and Angela Two Stars. This artwork is on the south shore of Bede Makaska, and it honors Hiyata Atunwe, a village that was on the lake in the mid-1800s, and the Dakota people that lived there, including Mapio Wachastow, who is also known as Cloud Man. The artwork features a steel railing along the walking path on the lake, and that the railing features the three sisters of corn, beans, and squash, as well as other animals and images of Native people. The work also includes stamped images in the pavement of the walking path itself of animals and plants that are important to the Dakota people, and the words of those elements in Dakota language. And Hiyata Atunwe is the location where the Dakota language was first written down. So those are three works to check out, and they're all on our public art map, and we'll be featuring the address for that map on the screen in a little bit.
I just got to say, I'm so proud of you for pronouncing those Dakota words. I really appreciate that. I love that.
Probably Dakota people are out there cringing at my
brain. No, not at all. I mean, for all the pushback that happened during the restoring of the name of Bede Makaska, just hearing you say those words, it means a lot. So thank you. Are there opportunities for Native artists in the coming months and years?
Sure. So, of course, we encourage Native artists to apply for any public art project we have going on. But we do have two projects that are in sites that are important to Native people in Minneapolis. The first one is at Awamiyami or St. Anthony Falls, and it's a large commission for an artwork to honor this sacred site to the Dakota people. And we will be posting a call for artists for that in early in 2025. Also, East Phillips and Cedar Field Parks near Little Earth and on Cedar Avenue have a public art project that we are just launching and in the planning stages. So folks who are interested could serve on the steering committee, and we'll be Also launching a call for artists for that project probably in 2025.
Can I just ask where people find that information?
They can find them the calls. Actually, if they go to the city's website and they put calls for artists in the search, they'll find the call for artists site.
Okay. And I think I just went right into the next question that was, how can people find more information about public art and the arts and cultural affairs around Minneapolis, not just those two projects that Mary just mentioned?
Yeah, and as Mary just mentioned, the easiest way to find out the most information is going to the City of Minneapolis Arts and Cultural Affairs webpage. That will also direct you to another page called Minneapolis Arts and Culture. That's where you'll find most of the programs in the public programs and grants area. And we also have social media and Facebook postings, as well as a newsletter. So we do encourage everybody to sign up for a newsletter. That is the best way to get new information. That's a newsletter that comes out once a month. We also post like other opportunities for all kinds of projects and programs and things that are happening in the community. And those are the primary tools, I think, to find out what's going on.
Thank you. So are there any other things that either of you would like to share with our audience?
Yes, I wanted to share that, just as the director of this new department, one of the things that is most important to us is centering the Native community, Native values, and Native culture. And so I hope that any Native artists or community members who are out there who are hearing this will really know that the City of Minneapolis, the Arts and Cultural Affairs Department, is taking our work really seriously, and we'll do everything that we can to center the Native community that lives here and the Native community that visits here.
That's beautiful. There's just one thing that I wanted to go back and share about, and that is working with the City of Minneapolis and being in government. One thing when I started that I never foreseen myself really being interested in was, or understanding, was how you can take artists and help them partner with different people doing city business and finding creative ways to get residents and stakeholders and visitors involved in that public process. I just think it's really unique. A lot of things that people wouldn't find interesting, the creativity that the artists bring is just, it's amazing. I know one time we had something in our department when we were trying to engage people, and we created this thing that was called Chalk City. And so like we brought it out to different neighborhood meetings, community events, and then you would write a question on it. And then the people could take the chalk and write their answers down. Mm. It's just the creativity in pairing that with city work really adds a different level of excitement and gets people really engaged and talking and walking up and saying, hey, what is this? What's going on here? So I just really look forward to finding those different opportunities and working with you guys.
Well, we welcome that.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for being a guest with us today. And I look forward to seeing you guys in our work. Hopefully I'll see you on Monday. Are you coming to the sunrise ceremony?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
7 a.m. You going to do the polar plunge? No,
they're shaking their head no.
Maybe next year. Thank you.
Well, Christine, great show as always. Great information, and you do a great job. And we're really appreciative of all the work you do for the community, and just a great show again.
Thank you. Thank you for the time here. I always appreciate it.
Hey, this has been Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air, and we're still here. We are the seventh generation.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Dom Selvia.
Next time, Earl Ingram joins me in studio. We'll talk about the FBI's failure to probe the 4,500 Justice Kavanaugh tips, plus the fallout from Hurricane Milton. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
The Todd Alba Show.
This narrative that the immigrants are coming to get you, that's fiction. Look at criminal charges in your community and look how many of those people who have been there for years, if not decades, and how many of those people are new immigrants. And even a smaller percentage of how many are undocumented immigrants. It's not happening. It would be like going to places and say, well, you know what? I'm running for Congress to stop the zombies.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.